You have 12 minutes.
All right.
You have 14 minutes.
Why do I get more? Is
You have 17. Well, do we still have to be out of here by 10?
No.
Okay. So, but we're going to deal. We'll see what happens. All right. Christian, tell us about these fabulous things.
Okay, cool. Well, my name's Christian, and among the many things I do, one of my functions in life is I work for a company called Keith McMillan Instruments. And
I'm going to be behind you.
it is a small company based in Berkeley, California, that primarily at the moment makes MIDI controllers. And we started out by making foot controllers. We have a foot controller called the Soft Step. We have another one called the 12 Step. And but I what I brought today was two of our non-foot controllers. I have the Cuneo, which we call a 3D multi-touch pad controller. And the reason we call it 3D is because there are three dimensions of control on the drum pads. We have note with velocity, which every other drum pad controller has. We also have pressure sensitivity on the pads, so you can lean into a pad and send pressure data. Also, we have location, that is, we have the ability to send X and Y data. For example, on this patch, I actually have XY data in a latching mode, so depending on where my finger is,
You want to turn it up?
I'm not doing any sound at the moment, but I'm
Ah.
just kind of showing visually what's going on. But that's the difference between our drum pad controllers and everybody else's, is we have note with velocity, pressure, and location on all of our drum pads.
How are you picking up location?
Basically, there are sensors in each corner of the
Okay.
pad, so depending on where your finger is, that's how it
Do the
basically.
pads rock, or do they
They do rock.
play? They do?
Sorry.
Figuratively.
Yeah. And they're the same size as an iPad, right?
These
So
are
you can
the
actually.
exact same size as an
So
iPad.
as you move from one corner to the other, it's going to pick up the change.
Yes.
It isn't just an either-or state.
Correct.
You'll hear this.
Yeah, actually, I'll show you that concept in Ableton.
They're terrible.
And they're well built.
They are. So, like, I have this phaser right now. Am I unplugged? Apparently, I got unplugged. I don't know why I dropped it.
They actually have a video of someone soaking this in beer and throwing it out like a third story window, and it goes clatter, clatter, running down, picking it up, plugging it in, and playing. So, yeah, it doesn't work with any other thing. If you put water, fail. It's very, very beer protected. Now, I'm not sure what good I'm doing with the camera, but or would we prefer to see the video? We're doing all right for now? Is it? Did okay.
Problems with USB
Well,
mini.
is it unplugged at the source?
I don't know. Let me see what I'm doing here.
Yeah, actually, yeah, if we have beer.
It actually gets it's bus powered right off the USB bus. I don't know what's
Oh,
happening.
okay. I thought you had it without anything.
I'm having a nightmare. It's not waking up. Great.
So this never happens.
I know.
It's got demo eyes. Ah. And there's another one up that Dave has, actually.
Cuneo. What's the name of the company again?
Keith
Keith
McMillan.
McMillan Instruments.
Keith
Oh, okay,
McMillan,
right. I'm back
KMI.
in my shirt.
So when I was in 2006 or so, I went to Project Barbecue, which is a bunch of game developers that has this think tank. And Keith McMillan was there, and I was a keynote there. And it was for stuff on this book, the Beyond Mastering. And Keith and I did a spin-off group making the design for these handies, where you lay your hands onto a reusable, actually, no, a disposable controller that you basically put your hands down, it would stick on there, and you'd use it as a controller, then you'd peel it off and throw it away. This is all just, it's pie in the sky, but it's the kind of thing that happens down at Project Barbecue. So
All right,
I do recommend
so
it.
back to the XY thing.
Come on in, Steve.
So if you can take a picture of the close-up on the screen there, I've got a phaser in Ableton mapped to my controller. And let's see if I'm in preset 5. Basically, I've got the on-off switch for the device on a pad here. So this pad actually can function as a toggle, which is really cool. I love the toggle aspect of it. I have another preset, preset 4, where I have every pad is a toggle. And I like to use those to mute tracks in Ableton or different DAW programs. But anyway, on this preset 5, the Qneo can hold 16 presets of stuff at any one time. I do have like on-off buttons on this bottom row, and then the top row is the corresponding XY control. Nice. So like you see the phaser there, I can turn on or off, and then you see it actually in use.
Can you make music?
Yes, indeed I can. All right. So back to my preset 4, which has all of our groovy mutes. And then preset 5, has my devices. So I can turn on a device, and then I can manipulate it by location. And what's cool is it's latching, so if I leave it kind of in that upper left-hand corner, it'll stay there, and I can turn the device on and off.
Great. Is it pressure-sensitive?
Yes, it's also pressure-sensitive. Right now I'm just doing location, but pressure-sensitivity is another thing you can do. One example of that is sometimes I'll use the wet-dry control of a plug-in and use the pressure. That way we're kind of morphing into the effect.
That's something you could do on an iPad.
No, in fact, the iPads have no pressure-sensitivity
right,
at all.
Right, that's what I mean.
They only have sort of pseudo-location, and they have a little bit of sort of capacitance, like it knows where your finger is going.
And we'll see that actually in our next presentation.
But that's the big advantage of our stuff, is that we just have these extra dimensions of control, which can lead to really fantastic processing capabilities. All this is doing right now is just wet dry on the exit axis. So.
And so that's the Qneo.
That's the Qneo. Everything on the Qneo is pressure sensitive, even the buttons and the switches. We have a long slider here, which is kind of neat. It can be used for, you know, pretty much anything you would want a slider for, but it also has the ability to use two fingers in a multi-touch way. So you can specify a range for, like, you know, a cue for an EQ or a frequency range for an auto filter, those kind of things. We have rotaries. We have, you know, the short sliders. The short sliders can also, you can use, there's various, like, little plugins so you can route audio, and they can function like little VU meters, essentially, as well. And it's just extraordinarily well built.
What would be the equivalent resolution of the pressure?
Probably 128.
Yeah, basically, it's giving us values from 0 to 127.
It's the MIDI, okay. The MIDI range.
CCs,
oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So cool.
Using a pressure-sensitive resistor?
I don't know if they're using the FSRs. Do you know?
I'm not sure what the technology is under the hood.
It's a secret. You can't know.
All right. So the other KMI product I bought to show today is the Qnexus, which is our newest product. And it is very similar to the Qneo. It's Qneo sort of laid out in a 2-octave keyboard. The big twist is that it's not only a USB MIDI keyboard, but it also has CV ins and outs. So, like, if you want to play your modular synthesizer, you can just hook the CV outs into an oscillator or whatever, and this is a really beautiful way to interface into your modular. Because it has MIDI USB, it actually functions as a CV gateway. So you could write a sequence in Ableton and then send it out and have it send CV to your modular synthesizer.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty cool. It also has CV in, and in the case of this demo, I have an expression pedal going into my CV in, which I've mapped to an auto filter on my Rhodes patch. So it's pretty cool. This is like a $150 device that gives you on-the-go keyboarding, an expression pedal in, which I think is worth the price of admission alone just for that. And it's really durable, and it feels great. I mean, it's sort of like...
And if you push it, you actually get expression changes
right,
on the thing.
Yeah, there are other dimensions to this as well. Yes, it has note with velocity, but we also have pressure sensitivity, which I don't have anything mapped at the moment. We also have a thing called tilt, which... I believe on patch 1, maybe not on that one. Anyway, we have pressure and we also have tilt, which is sort of like the rocking of your finger back and forth. That could be used for things like pitch bend or wet-dry control on an effect or whatever. So the net result is you just have a lot more expressiveness available to you. You could have pressure, you know, affecting a filter cutoff as you're playing. So the harder you press, the brighter the sound is.
Or I assume these don't have LEDs behind them?
They all do. They all definitely do. We're a big fan of stuff that lights up.
It's velocity sensitive or pressure sensitive?
It is both. It is both.
Okay.
And not only that, there's a couple of twists with that concept. We have the normal MIDI polyphonic aftertouch implementation, but then we also have what's called channel rotation, where we have a mode where each key you play can be set then on a successive MIDI channel. So what you could do is then you could bend individual notes independent of each other if you wanted to, or use pressure so that the harder you press on individual notes, it might affect that note only out of a chord. Stuff like that.
I think it'd be cool if you could take more than one of those and stack them together, but you grab those other buttons on the end, on the left.
True, well, you sort of can't you, with a USB,
I mean,
a couple of USBs?
You're right. It'd be cooler kind of if there wasn't stuff on the edge, maybe, so that you could, you know, have two of them for a four-octave keyboard.
You could have 88 keys if you want.
But we're still young in the force right now. These things,
okay,
we can go anywhere.
The next version of it. That'd be great.
I will pass that along.
The 88 Q Nexus?
How about one that you just goes that small, but then you kind of...
expandable. Expandable. It stretches. Yeah, it's new rubber. Okay.
So the keys aren't location sensitive. They just do the rocking.
Yeah, thing. Correct. You basically have note with velocity, you have pressure, and then you have tilt, which is sort of like placing your finger on it, and then either kind of, you know, leaning forward or leaning backwards, if you will.
And where can we get these fine items, Christian?
Well, these are obviously available at our website, the Keith and Millen Store. They're also available at our local friendly dealer, Rich Williams Lunchbox Audio, which I highly recommend.
Thank you.
I have 10 Q Nexus
and
stuff.
Cool. See? A question for you. Are you ever actually open?
Yes.
Yes, although I recommend calling me. David bought Cuneo, actually.
What's the Cuneo run?
Cuneo is $199.
I am moving, too. I'll be next to London Bridge starting next month.
Be open more often. Okay, cool. So did we just find something very, very cool out? Yeah?
Very cool.
Okay. All right.
The little keyboard is $150. Is that the list price?
Yes.
$149.
Yeah, he can get it for $149.
$149.95?
There's no
95?
It's $149.
See that? I like that. I always feel like someone's like lying to me when it's $149.99 or something.
Okay, so Christian, thank you very much.
I don't get to play.
Round of applause.
I was going to have to make music.
I skip
that?
He's going to make music. I told him he had to. So he's going to make music, then he's going to make music.
Can it be used as a step sequencer too? Didn't I see like a video?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it doesn't have a step sequencer of its own. But in essence, because you can send MIDI note back to the keyboard and it will light the keys, in essence, it kind of looks like it's doing that. If you write a sequence and then you send the data back, it lights the notes, and then you change the sequence and the notes change and so forth. You can make it function that way. It just doesn't come out of the box as a step sequencer itself. But it certainly can function with that with a host that's just friendly like Ableton or whatever.
Show us your work.
Okay, I want to make like 1 minute of music and then we'll move on.
My intention of 2 parts music to 1 part speech. Personally, I can recommend Christian as a producer and a mixer, and everybody that I go to, no offense to the other mixers in the room, but I highly recommend Christian for all of these things, including live sound and etc. This is a absolutely fabulous human being. So,
yeah, thank you, Steve.
Mr. Christian, there you go. Okay, Greg, are you ready to follow that?
Sure.
Oh yeah, I can do that. So we don't want to take this picture. Do we get a? What if we take a picture of that initially, or do you want the video first? When you're performing, we can do the video. How about that?
I don't really. Whatever you like me to do, man.
So you do want to take it?
Yeah, it's kind of
okay.
An AV
it's part
thing.
Of it.
Not really. Just
the there you go. It's all good. And you want the audio too, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You down?
Yeah.
It's all right. You're good. So this is good.
Unless you just want to watch.
Well, that's a good point.
Which I want to mention, if you're like sensitive, you know, ever had a photo epileptic attack, then just close your eyes because some of the stuff can be.
Shall I give him the laugh?
Yeah.
And then we'll give the other two the laughs. Okay. So, Greg.
Let me quickly.
Like, pull it up.
Yeah, get out of my mirrored stuff here.
Okay. I'm going to give you this.
What's that?
It's the microphone.
I probably don't need it.
No, you really do.
No.
Yeah, you really do. This is, there you go.
Okay.
Sorry, man. There you are. Sweet.
Cool.
Now, when this happens, I would love to show them the picture of this when the time comes, but you can just look that up when the time comes.
Yeah, it's okay. Wireless, so it's really cool to be in the middle of your set or whatever. And then pull the iPad out and stand in the crowd and manipulate audio with everybody. Or I've even sat at the bar and ran video, which is pretty cool. Just get drunk and do video stuff. So I want to not mix these together. Thanks for your patience. Sorry.
I could describe you for. When I first met Greg, he was...
Okay, I'm ready.
Actually, there's a story there. You'll have to wait for it. That's how you can make your guests hurry up, I guess.
I guess so. So I'm using the trigger finger. It's similar to what Christian was saying. I'm just sending a light signal back to the trigger that I'm actually pressing. And this is talking to an effect unit. Effect in Ableton called Stutter Edit. The iPad is running Touch OSC, and that's talking to the computer via Osculator. Might be able to pull Osculator up there. No, okay. Either way, there's a little MIDI chat room going on between this guy, and the mom here. So yeah, I'm just gonna play the beginning of this song. It has video goes with it, obviously. So the video that's playing is a royalty-free like VJ clip. I actually used this trigger to cue up the video in a certain place in the timeline or whatever. So I'm just literally automating a performance and then recording it into Resonant Avenue. Resonant Avenue is telling Ableton when I'm hitting this trigger, and it's writing a MIDI channel in Ableton. So that way I can literally record, you know, performance just like you would audio, but it's triggering up video, doing clips, effects. You can see some effects. So, I mean, I've played this video sequence over and over. Probably, you know, there's 3 or 4 hands doing something right now. And the audio, I don't know, it's got like 20 hours of production into it, so I can't really just play. Cool, so on the iPad, you can kind of see I made this, this is really fucking weird.
I could just talk.
I made this interface using TouchOSC, it's super easy.
Can you hear him?
If you
know, not in the back. It's all right. It's not going to hurt you. There you go.
Okay. So this is just a regular old, you know, auto filter. This is super easy to design. You can do it on your computer. If you can read, you can make one of these, you know. And in fact, I don't even think you have to read to do this. So I got a wet dry mix, obviously the filter, power off and on, and a couple tabs here. This is just an effect rack that I threw together, like 8 effects that I kind of use pretty often, maybe even too often, Steve. Right. This is a tape emulator. Let's see what's going on there. Yeah, sorry, I had to reboot my machine. So yeah, it's pretty fun to mess with that, like as if you're nudging a piece of wax vinyl, I think. A little high pass there, low here, glitch there. Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty cool. And then we got the B-repeat. This is the, anybody who knows about B-repeat, it's pretty comprehensive. And you could play it like. Oh, sorry. But yeah, I mean, as a drummer, because I'm just, all I really know is drums. So I like to play, you know, these effects kind of like a fill, like you would on a drum set or whatever. Pitch. So that's cool. Effects in here. Seem to have lost control of my computer.
Does it need to read?
I don't know. I think my computer's wet in the bed right now.
It's all excited. Okay. Is it literally not going to stop?
Ah.
We're back?
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Because, yes, I would like to hear a performance. Now that we've seen what you've got.
Still being a jerk. I'm just gonna skip through some of this set here. See how easy it is to like just hit an effect, anyone really. Yeah, so, I mean, the video, the flashing, like, strobe shit, it's all sequenced, excuse me, all sequenced in from Ableton telling Resolume, the video program, what to do. And I'm just going to end it real quick with this.
He introduced me to Skrillex, and I went and saw Skrillex at a place, and what that sounds like is the world's largest fax machine trying to connect.
I did not promote Skrillex, just throwing that.
No,
okay.
No, it's okay. It was early. It was cool. It was before he actually...
I think that was the name of his first album.
Mickey Mouse, I think, was the name of it.
World's loudest fax machine.
Yeah, it was really quite amazing. But so Greg does a similar but way more musical.
So how are you doing the video manipulation?
So, yeah, everything that I've done that you're seeing now is already written in Ableton as a MIDI value, right? So Ableton's talking to Oscillator, and Oscillator's talking to Resolume Avenue. Okay. So when and where, and then what effect to turn on and off.
Okay. Oscillator is
it's just
play on an oscillator, evidently.
I guess so. OSC, you later. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
OSC. Oscillator.
Kind of like manipulator.
Yeah, calculator.
Calculator.
What does it do? It's a communication.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a that, thing.
That talks to other things.
It's like communication.
OSC is a language.
Yeah, we'll shift over.
Do you want to play one?
Yeah, I'll just finish with
OSC, okay. Which has got a much finer resolution.
OSC, how long has
thanks,
that
James.
Been it's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's before Gibson destroyed a lot of it, it was like, wasn't that
the first
early?
Unicorn?
Yeah, it was something like, in my, I think when the Unicorn first came out with it, it was part of the Motu group. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of your high-end DAW and software programs like Kainlan and things like that will take care of us. We'll use OSC Max.
Yeah, I'm just going to play a quick
now,
play a quick snippet.
Back. That's good, though. Thank you. We're going to have this crossfade into Lance, but here's the performance again.
Yeah, this is just a little a song that I made with some footage that I took when I lived abroad. Please fucking play. What the fuck's wrong with you right now? Seriously?
This is part of the show, actually.
Oh, it's
yeah.
The world and demoing.
It's like a puppet, but my puppet's a computer.
There it is. So, go to a Pressure Suit show, this is what you see. It's very fabulous. And when I first met him, he was in One Carper Green, which I thought was some sort of a golf course. But then I realized that when you come up to to metered lights. It says one car per green. And so their ads were everywhere. But they left that behind. So you good?
Good, thanks.
Thank you. Let's give them a round. As usual, push to the back, but I think we're doing all right for tonight.
Half hour.
I don't even know.
Am I hearing some sampled voices there?
Yeah, there is a sampled voice. It was actually a studio voice.
So
it still is, I guess.
Video? And audio now? Video, here's your video.
Thank you.
Clear.
Thank you.
That's very nice.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Now, I will introduce Lance Hayes, DJ Drunken Master, who used to have, was back in the day,
he had
racks of synthesizers when they had racks of synthesizers.
Are
you looking for...
I'm already plugged in for audio here.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Oh, you already are,
for this,
so you don't
yeah.
need that.
No, it's right here.
Okay, cool. Yeah. No sweat. So
he's already in my mixer, independently.
Okay. But Meat Distributors was one of your early bands. Meat Distributors. And what's another... over there.
Oh, yeah, there we
are. Another of your earlier bands?
Chocolate Sasha, going back before that. And we did sort of like an orb thing where we had, it was all electronic. It was me and a drummer, and he played in a full electronic kit, and I just played synthesizers and had live sequences running. So.
And those were on hardware synths?
Yeah.
And so when you saw Reason, you found something that was very familiar to you to work with.
Yes.
It's like a drafter on a drafting board getting into CAD. The people that just know computer-aided design from computer-aided design, they don't understand you don't put your arm through the drawing because it will smear. And so the things that this deep knowledge sort of comes through, and I think that Lance has really done a great job of that.
Thank you.
I've mastered some of his work. And DJ Drunken Master is his gnome. Here, I'll take that from you if you'd like.
Sure.
And are you...
I was going to sit down maybe for
Please
part
do.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Lance Hayes.
Thank you. So, yeah, I started out doing a lot of band work, and I was in, I played trumpet for years, and then decided to start building my own studio in high school, which included my first synthesizer, which was a Juno 106, and then had a friend, he invested with me, and we actually had a DX7, we had a bunch of, really kind of just a bunch of analog keyboards and stuff like that, and went up with a Super Jupiter, had another friend who had a system 100M that we used to mess around with. So we had this huge, like, full-on setup. It was great, but, you know, anybody who ever worked in that environment knows that saving patches and doing production work is really time-consuming, and that can be a whole job into itself, and that's where people like Michael Boddicker and stuff come from. It's like they had this job where they would go and set everybody's synthesizers up, but we didn't have that person. We were also writing all the music, so it was like, it was 24 hours a day most of the time working, and then... So the bands I was in, we were still doing that style of stuff until like the late 80s, basically, until the early 90s. We still had a full, you know, acoustic setup, or I should say electronic analog setup. And I was exhausted, frankly, from messing around with stuff like that for so long. And in about 2000, when a lot of the virtual synthesizers started appearing, I was really excited about kind of exploring those options and seeing what was out there. So for me, that actually meant doing work with Reason, which was, you know, just a huge eye-opener for me at the time. It was the first thing that was kind of really available that allowed you to do essentially acoustic-sounding... Oh, do we? Oh. Is the computer your device? I don't know why it doesn't like that. Oh, maybe it's because I don't know. I didn't mean to. Hello? Anyway, it's the demo thing. It was working earlier, wasn't it? I don't know. Here, let me try closing it and opening it again. See if that helps.
Which OS are you
on? Not disturb. See if I need... Oh, yeah. Here, hang on. Anything? No? Oh, wait. There we go.
Yay.
No. Wait. Oh. What?
I, of course, cannot see it, so I have no idea what I'm doing now.
If you do it one more time, will it go to both?
Maybe.
Usually it does. Mm-hmm. Need a little mirror on the
keyboard. It'll work. Yeah, there we go. Now we're all here. Okay, sorry about that. So, anyway, Reason came along. I was very excited about the opportunity to play with a device that actually looked like my rack. And it was a safe bet that it would do pretty much everything I'd wanted it to do early on. And so I started working with Reason, and I immediately had like more success career-wise with it than I had with any of my other work. Everything else I'd ever done, I had struggled for years, and you know, Anonymity and our band had always like, you know, we had a little bit of luck with some licensing, but nothing had ever really taken off for us. And then in 2001, Warner Brothers contacted me and wanted to use some of my work for the Matrix stuff. So I went up with a bunch of work that went up in the Matrix trilogies, mostly in the Animatrix and Reloaded and Revolutions in TV specials. They were using it like all the Best Buys in the country. It was being used for advertising and stuff. And kind of kept growing from there, and now I actually score mostly video game soundtracks is what I do. So I do a lot of content for Microsoft. I have the opportunity to work with like full orchestras. I just scored Forza 5, which we actually did. We went down to Skywalker and recorded strings. We did work at Avatar in New York, which used to be Power Station, for anybody who knows about that pedigree. So it was a pretty remarkable project. And a lot of it's because of pretty much my work with Reason and having been an analog, you know, guy going way back, because they really wanted electronic scores for their stuff. So they asked me to come in and basically write electronic music. And they kind of, the thing is, it's funny because they have this sort of this style that they were looking for, because in video games, you can't do certain types of music very easily. It'll seem like the game is broken. Like, we can't do glitch. We can't do too much distortion. There's certain things that, like, they're always worried you're going to tell the player, oh, my God, my game's broken, you know, like if the music starts jumping around too much. So it sounds a little like down-tempo, I think, is kind of the style they like. So I thought I'd play a few examples of a few things and then maybe walk through some of the facets. Has anybody ever used Reason? Yeah. So it's. I mean, people are familiar with it, basically. It's been around for a long time. It's kind of one of the early adopters for, like, the whole virtual analog slash... Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure.
And then flip it?
Sure.
Having the cables jump was always...
Yeah, this is kind of a fun thing. If you haven't seen this, it's a neat effect. And you basically get this entire rack of gear that you're looking at that, you know, essentially it is basically the same as looking at just a rack of regular, you know, tools if you're used to using that environment.
Drop the cables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, it approximates a lot of the analogs in, like, the Thor, for instance. It's sort of a little compact modular environment, which you can put in up to 3 oscillators. You get filter sets you can put in that range from kind of a Moog emulation to some Oberheim emulations to some really weird stuff. You can set it up in different configurations, and you have an entire control panel down below. I mean, we don't really have enough time to get into all this now, but it's pretty amazing. The range of tools you have. You have a wavetable synth in here in the Maelstrom. You've got just a host of tools. And then there's... But yeah, yeah. You've got samplers. There's like a basic kind of classic drum machine. Plus, they have tools you can make drums out of. You can do all kinds of crazy stuff with it. I always find it's kind of fun because no matter where I find myself, there's always more you can do. And everything, every single thing in the entire rack can be basically controlled externally in some capacity. So, you know, if I pull up any pad or whatever, I can actually, you know, if it's in a combinator format like this, I can control large chunks of data at one time, or I can get down and do these really granular changes with just really small devices or something like that. It's pretty impressive. So, and again, I wish we had a little more time to get into it, but
on Saturday
I can get into a little bit more detail, but for right now I guess I can play an example. Now, this is a track I basically wrote for the Forza 4 soundtrack, which was never officially released. And in an unrelated note, I can say that there's a big news announcement coming from the Forza crew in another couple of days. So, for what that's worth. It was sort of a weird thing that it didn't get released a couple years ago when this game came out. The new game is coming out shortly, and it's for the Xbox One. Yeah. there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here, obviously. I do have some samples that are from, I actually created in another, in Sonar. That's this content down here. It's the East-West string samples played back through a bunch of processing, and it's the Quantum Leap's pianos, which I performed on, and then ran it through a bunch of filters that sound like old tape machines and stuff. So it sounds like an older recording. Kind of a Montauban inspired, this one. But then, like I said, there's actually a whole bunch of drum programming going on in the background. And a few loops. Some processing on it. So there's like some interesting little rhythm ARP stuff going on, which is done with the little ARP device they have in here, which is a lot of fun. Kind of a classic 60s style bass, which actually is a really fun device that they have in here. If I can find it, where is it? So basically, that's the Combinator playing back. Yeah, here it is. It's this just sort of an older style bass sound. That's actually samples. It's a bunch of bass samples from the Reason bass setups.
K,
and then
K hollow body, is that Carol K?
Probably.
K is also a manufacturer.
Yeah, it could be. I'm not sure which one it is.
K is K-E-Y-E.
But it's actually just a bunch of samplers that are basically, they have individual hits from that instrument basically played back, and it's your standard sample, multi-sample setups. And
which version of Reason is this?
This is 7. This was actually composed in, I think, 5, because from a couple of years ago, so it's actually sort of shoehorned into the new version. Yeah, because, I mean, I've got this whole SSL mixer over here, style mixer, which I'm barely using, you know, which is kind of a shame, because it actually sounds great. It's really nice. It's got some nice features. This new whole mixer setup has just some cool, like, you know, just so you can do quick profiles of your audio. And if you want to just throw some EQs on it really fast. The master compressor is really quite nice on this new system. This is probably going to hit it pretty hard, but kind of an SSL style compressor. So that's one thing. Another thing I use it for a lot is sound design. I did a bunch of work on the Gears of War 3 soundtrack, and so some of the work I did for that, oh, here we go. This is awfully busy. There we go, much better. I think you turned me on to fences, actually. So I did this huge session with a violinist who came into the studio, and he actually recorded all kinds of crazy bowed noises from metal to beautiful, like, just harmonic content on his violin. His name is Jeff Ball, and he actually did a fantastic job with that. And it basically turned into this session where he basically created all this radically weird content for me that I wound up using for sound design stuff. And then later on, I got called in to do this project where we had to create music that would basically occur at the end of the world, where you had no technology left, or you had like a couple of broken phones and maybe some handful of like acoustic tools and things you could bang on, but that's it. And the idea was that basically I would create this music that was just terrible, and or very strange, or created in unconventional ways. And so I took his content and I basically ran it through a bunch of devices and came up with, among other things, some really interesting violin tools. Most of what you're hearing is actually violin, or taps on a violin, or a number of other things. And it was all recorded at about 24-bit, 96, and then pitched down and pitched all over the place, and we just did weird stuff with it. The opening, it's got a kind of a Tom Waitsy vibe to it, I thought, which I kind of dug. But one of my favorite features of it was that, so like here's the body tapping. It's actually like him just playing on his violin. It's pitched down. Here's him playing on his violin, tapping on the strings, and then that's also pitched way down. So it sounds kind of bass-like. And I think I do have some acoustic bass samples in there too, but you know. And then the snare is actually a real snare. Bass drum is real bass drum. And then I took the violin. So this was kind of the fun thing. So I took the violin and I ran it through this one of the Neptune, which is their vocoder, which is a lot of fun. Oops, I can get that out of the way. Here we go. Yes, there we go. Okay. I didn't lose my screen. Oops. Uh-oh. Now it doesn't like me anymore. There we go. Okay. So this is the Neptune, basically, which was, I used it for retuning the entire violin part as it came through. And let's see if I can get this to play back. Here we go. I can start from the beginning. It is. It's just I've managed to mute the wrong thing, I think. Oh, yeah. Here we go. So this little intro violin mess, for lack of a better word, is actually, over here. It's essentially a bunch of samples from the violin run through. Oh, except I can't do this because I don't have a right click. anyway, it's a violin sound. Oh, here we go. Yeah, I'm gonna try this up here because we can just play it back as a temp. Oh, no, this was not violin. This was actually him playing a... It's him playing a... I think it's actually... It's a propane tank. He's playing a propane tank with a bow.
I was going to say kitchen sink.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it was real close to that. Anyway, and then I ran it through the Neptune to get this effect. So when it plays back... you get this effect with the Neptune basically trying to fight it for pitch. So anyway, Reason's a really powerful tool for doing sound design. I use it a lot for that. And there's kind of not a lot it can't do. You can record in on it now, and it's got MIDI in and MIDI out and all the usual stuff. It's nice, too, because it actually has a bunch of CV content. So for doing rack mount stuff, I'm really interested in getting back into, you know, rack mount gear because it has full CV output now, and you can actually record your performances for CV. So you can actually create files of CV content for it that you could then send out to other devices and just get a converter. So all you need is a MIDI to CV converter, and then you can do that. Or there's a couple other different ways you can do it, but it's... There's probably someone here who knows that a little better than I do.
Expert Sleepers just made the plugin for there, and Expert Sleepers makes a set of suites that use any DC coupled audio interface. So like an old Motu 828, you know, will be perfect for it. Give you 8 channels. Wow. And so you could draw the waveforms, you know, or the control voltage curves and stuff.
And the line outputs becomes the CV.
Yes, the line out becomes the CV.
That's awesome.
And Expert Sleepers also does a feedback loop thing where it will listen to your oscillator as it puts out a control voltage and auto scales so that it's in pitch.
So how do you get DC out of your audio card? If it's AC coupled,
they have a special cable that you can buy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Typically it works once it works with it. Yeah. DC coupled, and the Motu ones happen to be DC.
How old are those?
You can get them for $75 on eBay.
Okay.
Well, somebody must make a DC coupled IO now.
RME, or is it
RME? RME, yeah.
Yeah, they make RME. One. Some of the high end ones too.
Because they should be really cheap.
Yeah, but most don't because they want to keep the DC up. They're
of course, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, does somebody make a USB to control voltage box?
Well, the QNexus actually does that.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
There's
that's one side.
Yeah, the advantage of the extra sleeper one is that it's not tied to MIDI. So you don't, most CV, MIDI to CV converters, you get 128 notes, you get the steps.
That's right.
Whereas the extra sleeper is like full CV. The steps are there, but they're so small.
16-bit
steps, yeah.
Yeah. So there's options for that basically out there. And I'm yet to actually have a chance to sit down with it at some point, but I'd love to explore that opportunity too, because it just seems like it'd be a great way to kind of create even more opportunities with using those tools. I have one other track here. This is actually something I did for a Kinect title. It's the Nike Plus Kinect Fitness title, which I don't know if anybody's ever even played. It's so funny because we were working on this thing and I'm like, I'm in terrible shape. So we used to joke, you know, because you had to make a certain amount of room for the Kinect device on the Xbox to work. And so I used to joke, oh, yeah, you want to make sure you also have enough room for the paramedics for me when I pass out from doing this, because I am not qualified for this.
Do you play it in order to get the feeling?
I had to do it. I had to just to get certain things to queue up. And, it was just like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, my hammy, I'm going to die, you know. It's pretty bad.
Miami?
Yeah, exactly. Moon's over. So here's another cool thing you can do. Like, obviously, there's just so much room for manipulation. This is a tape, kind of weird tapey effect that I created, where I basically took a pulverizer and an echo box, which is like an old Roland echo box, basically, and created these really whacked out kind of taped drum effects. Kind of an old 808 styled drum thing, and then just distorted it. And so the other thing about video games is that you're always looking to create layers. It's all about layers and implementation of those layers, and you need different levels of excitement. And so for a game like a fitness title, you're basically trying to create an environment in which there's room for the track to keep expanding and get more exciting as the person's doing better, or if they're really screwing up and it starts to taper down, they're like, you know, oh, well, I've really clearly messed up. And so that's like at the very bottom level, you have something like that, but then... So that's kind of an example of how that develops.
Wow.
Thanks. And I wish I had more time. Reason's really deep. There's a lot to it. But Saturday we'll get into a little bit more.
Yeah. So there's we have a good day on Saturday. Yeah. I think we've had a really good night tonight. And thank you all for hanging out with us. And
November 6th.
November 6th is the next AES meeting.
Right.
For weaponized audio.
Yes, and we'll talk about 137 decibels in the kingdom.
And you're going to put that in here.
In the
kingdom. Bring your earplugs.
Are there any other questions for Lance real quick before we lose him? Or for any of our providers?
Where are you for? Where do you live?
I'm actually down in Kent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And with that,
thank you for a great
time. Thank you. Thank you.